Hello, guys and girls, and welcome to Beyond the Box Office, a new podcast with myself, Bam Sam, and my co-host, Steve. Say hello, Steve.
Thanks for having me. I'm actually really enjoying this opportunity. This is a great new show. We've got some great concepts coming up, and as I said, I'm just looking forward to this. I'm psyched, man.
Yeah. So before we get started, obviously, some of you may have known us from some of our other podcasts. We used to do the Movie Dudes. We do the Game Over Man video game podcast. I do the Jurassic Cast podcast, which I'm hoping a lot of you have come over from that. And also, Steve, you've got your YouTube channel?
Yes, our YouTube channel. You probably won't find it. It's very hard to find. But basically, we're looking for Rewind That. It's on Blogspot. Great. It's movies, TVs, games, whatever I feel like talking about and moaning about on the day.
Yeah. So enough about that. Let's get into what we're doing. So what... Is this an intro episode? We're just going to sort of tell everyone what we're about and have a little talk about what we've seen lately.
Yeah, pretty much. This is just going to, you know, go from the hip and just go with it. Intro. We've got some great ideas. We've got some great features coming up. The pitch is a really good one where every episode, myself and Bam Sam are going to pitch each other an idea for a movie. And basically... you get to vote on which one you think should be made first. So, for example, if I was to say, oh, Buckaroo needs a movie, do you like the idea? Vote for it. Tweet us.
Yeah. And also, after we wrap up this episode, stay tuned because I did an interview with a great actor that you've probably seen in plenty of movies, and he's actually become a good friend of mine since I interviewed him for the Jurassic Cast podcast, you know, with Taylor Nichols, who... you may know from Jurassic Park 3, he was in Congo, Boiler Room, and he's actually in the new Godzilla film as well. So stick around for that. It was a great interview. He's a great guy. Yeah, so where do we go from here?
Well, do you want to get into Godzilla? You saw it.
Yep, Godzilla. Gojira.
I saw it.
Yep. Do you want to put your... You've been upsetting some people on the old TikTok.
Yeah, apparently I've been upsetting a lot of people on the internet with my views and opinions on the new Godzilla movie. I don't know why. I'm not actually trying to upset anyone. It's not my fault. I think my views and opinions are quite valid, and I'm not quite sure why there is so much absolute love for this movie. I mean, maybe I just don't get something. Maybe it's because... the 98 film was such a letdown to fans, and Godzilla is such an iconic character, and people spent their entire childhoods hunting down Toho like VHS copies of the movies and waiting to see them on TV whenever they were shown, because obviously these were from Japan. These weren't Hollywood released. These were rare. So maybe just having one negative review on this film gets up people's arse. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because they've been waiting so long, you know, for the movie, and they've sort of built it up in their head so much that, you know, that they're like, fuck, you know, they've almost gone into it wearing rose-tinted glasses, and they've come out of it, and they've convinced themselves, even if they did feel let down by it, because they've built it up to themselves so much and they've been on the internet basically effing and blinding everyone for the last year on forums, that now that, you know, they can't sit there and let anyone say a bad word about it in case they start believing the truth for themselves. Although I'm saying that, I quite enjoyed it, you know?
Well, yes, I mean, this is one of the first times we've seen a movie, like a major movie release, within the same week. I mean, normally... I wait for the DVD because I didn't really feel that urge to go to the cinema. Normally, and you do the same thing. Sometimes I'll rush and see something that you're like, well, yeah, I'm not really that interested. This is what makes the dynamic work quite well. We see eye to eye on most films, but there's always these films that we're like completely the opposite, like enemies on RoboCop.
Yeah.
So. What do you think of this? What are your views on this movie?
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think I've been watching so many cack action films lately. And as you were saying about RoboCop, I watched that just the night before I watched Godzilla. So I was like, oh, another sort of, you know, another action film that didn't really come across as an action film, you know?
Well, I mean, the RoboCop argument is for another time, to be honest, because I am one of the biggest fans of the original RoboCop you will ever meet, but I didn't actually mind the 2014 RoboCop that much in comparison to what it could have been.
It wasn't, I mean, we'll say it another time, it wasn't awful, it just, what was it that I said to you? The action scenes just didn't seem very action-y. They were like, they were almost like they were played out through a muffler. Like, you know, just, it just didn't seem big and explosive, you know, it just seemed a bit tame. We can have this another discussion another time. But the thing I liked about Godzilla, I liked it how it was all done. I mean, it's not really spoilering because we're not going to reveal major plot points, but the cinematography was... All right, there will be spoilers, but not for me. The cinematography, I really enjoyed. You know, the way that it was... Gareth Edwards did with Monsters, it was not... It's not a found footage, you know, handheld camera, you know, Blair Witch-style film, but the cinematography is all done from the point of view of the humans, you know, us. You know, it's rather on street level with a camera, you know, like the cameraman standing with the cast, you know, it's rather inside a building or inside a vehicle, or it's on a rooftop of a building, you know. And even the skydive scene, you know, is it the halo jumping?
The halo
jumping. It's pretty much all done from whether you're a skydiver, one of the skydivers inside one of their masks, or you're on the street below or in a building watching them, you know.
Well, first up, I mean, without a doubt, this is one of the most beautifully visualized movies I've ever seen. I mean, if a disaster movie can look beautiful, it is hands down beautiful to watch. The halo jump scene, cutting between the wide shots of the red smoke spiraling down from the clouds onto the city and cutting into Aaron Taylor Johnson's mask as he dives, I've never seen anything like it. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest thing with this film was how were they going to differentiate themselves from Pacific Rim? That was always my concern when this film was first announced. I'd seen Pacific Rim and knew a Godzilla movie was coming out. And I was like, right, okay, well, this is Pacific Rim. This is a big movie, monsters, giant robots. What are you going to do to make me go, shit, I need to see Godzilla now, because I've just got my feel of giant kaiju fighting. And they went darker, and that was the only way they could have gone with it. But, you know, was it a great movie overall?
It was an entertaining movie. I mean, it's weird, because I think I really need to see it again. I mean, I watched it in 2D, not 3D. I really watch films in 3D. It's something I can't grasp with them. But, you know, there was bits in it where I was just like, I wasn't exactly blown away by 100% of the film. There was some bits in it where I was a bit like, you know, but, it almost where people slag off Godzilla 98, you know, Godzilla, the new one, is a disaster film. There wasn't really any action in it. Yeah. There wasn't any of that, you know, like in, the last Godzilla where he's chasing them around the city in a cab, you know, there wasn't any like big thrills in the new Godzilla, if you will. Cause pretty much all the fighting that's going on and the destruction is in the background, isn't it? Especially with like the first few Godzilla reveals and monster reveals, isn't it? It's all, you don't actually see it, do you? It's all cut to like news footage in the TV in the background.
Yes, actually, the news footage was quite strange, because the one scene that really stood out to me, that really confused me, and it didn't fit at all and didn't make any sense, was how a hospital had the news of Godzilla and the Mutos fighting on TV, but everyone was walking around as if it was just a normal day. There was none of that Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead,
even like the post 9/11 thing, you know, it was just like a weird, like, you know, people were just almost in disbelief, you know.
Yeah.
Even just something where it's like, oh my god, fucking giant monsters and dinosaurs are real. You know, this is the end of the world by the looks of it.
Yeah, and no one seemed to be reacting to it. And this was my thing with it. I mean, okay, I'm going to do some spoilers. Okay, it was well-paced, it was well-constructed. However, as soon as Bryan Cranston's character dies, the film becomes a snooze fest.
Character-wise? Or
character-wise, definitely. Because we're seeing this great event, this massive monster battle, from a more humanistic perspective. And not only is no one really reacting that much, but the characters just don't give anything. I mean, I have been critical of movies that feel they need to show everything just because they can with CGI. And I do commend the film for doing that. The trouble is Aaron Taylor-Johnson delivers a decent performance with completely bland material. But where is the reaction, you know, to, where's the reaction to what's going on around you? Why is no one panicking more?
It's almost like they're just being, people being evacuated, you know, there is something missing from it. I can feel what you're getting at. And it was missing, as I said, with the 98, it's missing that thrill, you know, like, you know, I can't quite put the thumb on the way to describe it, you know, it was big, it was disastery, but it doesn't quite have that, you know, like, even like the Spielberg War of the Worlds had it, you know, like that sense of like, fucking hell, it's all going down, we've got to get out of here. And it's had them suspenseful, you know, chase scenes and escape scenes. It didn't have any of them, really, did it? Even no, when they plant the, spoiler alert, they nick the bomb from the egg nest, and even when Kick-Ass goes back in and burns all the eggs and the what was it called? The fucking, the moth thing or whatever it's called. Even when that started coming after the boat and that, it just didn't feel like, you know, like a sense of panic, like, oh shit, we've got to get the fuck out of here, you know?
No, I mean, I can see where they went, because they handed over Godzilla originally to the director of Independence Day, who gave it this very grand, jokey, big scale, just action movie. So they wanted to take it back to a more humanistic approach. Just like, again, this film is very reminiscent of how Steven Spielberg approached the War of the Worlds. Because if you think about it, War of the Worlds came out quite a few years after, but still in a good recent memory of Independence Day.
Yeah.
So audiences were asking, well, how can you make your alien invasion movie stand out from Independence Day? Well, we go into a family trying to survive, you know, the end of the world through an alien invasion.
Mm-hmm.
So Gareth Edwards has done the same thing. He's seen Pacific Rim come out, and they're making a movie that's more about the personal relationships. But unfortunately, there just aren't any.
It was a film that tried to focus on the humanity, but lacked any humanity.
Yeah. I mean, I know the director wanted us to basically witness this apocalyptic situation through the eyes of Aaron Taylor-Johnson's character, Ford. But it was like he made him as unoffensive as possible so that you literally... Do you know what? Actually, do you know what it reminded me of? Rather, you know how, like, normally in a movie, you connect to a character and you follow a movie through a character's eyes? Do you remember, you know the recent trend with the open world and sandbox video games?
Yeah.
Where you basically are, because the game aims for you to play through the story, through the eyes of a John Marston, or other characters, or even especially anything like Skyrim, that's what it felt like. It felt like that Ford Brody was like an avatar. He was like this unoffensive, bland, completely, you know, from a video game, I'm just going to put myself into his shoes and go through the movie with him. Well, is that wrong? I mean, I don't know. That's just what I thought.
No.
Because it was like they were too scared to give Brody a personality.
I think because if like, for example, with the, what's his name, Matthew Broderick character, I think that people are too afraid to give someone too much of a personality in fear of they come across annoying and, you know, like everyone thought that, sorry?
Shia LaBeouf, Transformers.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's the fear there that, like, oh, that annoying character, the annoying main character from Transformers, the annoying main character from Godzilla 98, the annoying character from, you know, pretty much, what was it like, The Day After Tomorrow? You know, you could go on forever naming the annoying main character of the films, you know, the big budget films. I mean, what were some big budget sort of action-y disaster films from the last few years? Like 2012, who was the main character in that? John Cusack.
Yeah.
You know, them main characters were pretty fucking annoying.
Well, that's the thing. They obviously wanted to move away from having stereotypes. But then again, stereotype doesn't mean a character. It's like Han Solo's an amazing character, but he's not a stereotype. He's not a damn shit whack, oh my god, you know, Michael Bay style.
Mm.
He's a character. And I don't want to go to the cinema necessarily. And I mean, I want to feel like I'm involved, but I don't want to. You want to see the movie through the plight of the character, not necessarily through the eyes of the character.
Mm.
You know, you want to go on a journey holding the character's hand, not in their head.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I understand what you're saying.
I mean, Bryan Cranston, hands down, stunning. Absolutely greatest performance I've seen for at least 10 years on the big screen.
Mm.
Without a doubt. But the trailer gave me Bryan Cranston, all these great scenes, and then kills him off.
Well, that's what I mean. Where he got redemption, not like he got redemption, didn't he? Like he wanted to prove that there was something more to it, the reason why his wife died, and he was proven right. Where could he have gone from there without dragging Kick-Ass's characters, without slowing him down for him to get home to his family? You know?
Well,
could he have gone? Because he knew Kick-Ass wouldn't leave him behind. Well, like not in a way that he died on purpose, but he knew, you know, like the writers knew that there's no way that he could come along for the what was needed next. And didn't you think it was a fucking coincidence wherever Kick-Ass needed to go, that's where the Godzilla and that ended up?
Oh, it was
Tokyo. He's like, I'm going to Hawaii, and then it's like, oh, the other monster's in Hawaii, and then he's like, right, I need to get home to San Francisco. Godzilla's heading to San Francisco.
It was, and this is the point. There are so many things in this movie that if it had Zack Snyder or Michael Bay stamped above the title, it would be getting torn apart like anything. Like, for example, the scene where they explain what Godzilla is and what Mutos are. Oh, Mutos are parasites. Godzilla is this alpha predator. Oh, they existed at a time when they absorbed radiation from the Earth and fed off that.
Hmm.
It's ludicrous. It's absolutely, it's ridiculous. You buy it because of the tone of the film, but I dare anyone to say that if Michael Bay had his name on the credits, they wouldn't now be kicking off, and that speech, that scene would now become one of the most parodied scenes in history. I mean, that's the thing. Bryan Cranston is fantastic. I went to the movie thinking I was going to see a lot of Bryan Cranston.
That's the thing. They pretty much advertised it as though they were clever, because Bryan Cranston is huge at the moment with Breaking Bad, you know, just finished in that. And this was his next big thing after Breaking Bad. And they pretty much marketed it as though he was the main character.
Yeah, and his role was like 40 odd minutes.
Oh, I'll tell you what fucking annoyed me is, I tell you, I've not been avoiding spoilers of Godzilla, like I've watched the trailers, but up until the day before I went to see it, I didn't know that there was other monsters in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
They did it well. You didn't even know it. Any of the trailers didn't show the mutos, did they? It was pretty much done as though, it was just Godzilla attacking. Or coming out. And, it was fucking going on a website. I don't want to name the website, but I went on a website and it had one of them pop up. You know, you go on it and the screen comes down and it's showing the trailer, but like without the volume on. And yeah. It showed the fucking, the Muto flying across the screen. You know, when that man's in the building, you just see it go whoop, past. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. I said, like, I could have gone into this film totally like, whoa, you know? But, I mean, that's another story about it, like spoiling. I thought they did pretty well to cover it up. I mean, maybe if I was more into the old Godzillas and that, and I know in one of the trailers you see like one of the Muto's hooks come out and stomp on the ground. But you know, to someone like me who's not really you know, got much knowledge on the older Godzilla films, then you know, to me that could have been anything. You know, it could have been, you know, part of Godzilla for all I know.
Well, the thing was that some of the early trailers had already been picked up upon, because there was a scene where there were planes falling out of the sky, which obviously Godzilla doesn't fly and he's not that tall. Mm. And there was actually a winged creature diving into the ocean. One of the scenes was picked up and analyzed, and a lot of people thought it was going to be a creature from the Godzilla
universe.
Obviously, but these Mutos, I could be wrong, but are pretty much made for this, like, incarnation, this reboot.
For all I know, then planes falling out could have just been like, I don't know, Godzilla, like, whacked them out of the air, or he, like, threw a fucking aircraft carrier and they were flung all over the place. You don't know.
Yeah. Or he picked up a battleship or an oil tanker and used it as a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Which is badass.
But also, did you notice, a lot of the CGI changes from the trailers, which also, backs up my theory of, I don't think they were looking to reveal any other creatures. One specifically, when his wife is evacuating the university, or the hospital, and they sort of, when Godzilla and the Muto are like kicking off in the street, and they're like going into like a subway or something, aren't they? And they're closing the doors and you can see them fight in the background.
Yeah, oh yes, because Godzilla screams at the door.
Yeah, on the advert. Yes. Godzilla. See what I mean? They changed it all to, I think they were marketing it to surprise you.
Yeah, they were trying. I mean,
yeah, exactly. And there was a few changes like that. And, I mean, we're going to end up talking about Godzilla the whole episode, yeah?
Well, no, I mean, I want to, because...
So this is the Godzilla episode.
Well, yeah, no, because I want to make some more points. I want to make the point that killing off Bryan Cranston's character was a weak attempt at us at the movie saying, we're risky, we're taking risks, we're going to kill off the guy that you came to see. But it didn't come across that way at all. It was like, oh, really? Oh, okay.
Hmm.
Because obviously when Bryan Cranston's injured and he gets onto the gurney and he's loaded onto the he's basically going to go into an ambulance, isn't he? And, that Ken Watanabe's asked, who do you need? And he points to Bryan Cranston. And
you
think, brilliant. And then he dies. It was just a weak attempt at sort of like luring the audience into, we're not just a summer blockbuster. We're going to kill any character we feel like, but actually we're just killing Bryan Cranston because we couldn't be asked to write any more good dialogue.
I mean, I don't know where else to go with my opinions. Also, you know, comparing it to Godzilla 98, it's almost uncomparable to me. You know, obviously some fanboys will be like, fuck off, Godzilla 98 shit. It's not even really Godzilla, but it's a different type of film. As I said, this is a disaster film, almost like an apocalypse film, you know, whereas Godzilla 98 is an action film. It's a 90s action film, you know? Do you know?
Yeah, I 100% agree.
It's almost like Gildea's got Godzilla in it. It's almost like comparing Psycho to the Bates Motel TV show. It's the same characters, but it's a completely different format. You know, it's a completely different approach. You can't really compare the two.
Yeah, I mean, in this, nature is unleashing these forces, and I can understand why the characters can't really do anything, and they try to move around it.
Yeah.
It's like there's a giant hurricane going on. You can't just run into the middle of a hurricane and Hadouken it or give it a tiger uppercut. You have to sort of like do what you need to do to survive around the hurricane. So while that's going on, I can see that point. It's like there's two separate films going on, two separate storylines. You know, there's the humans and there's nature.
Yeah.
And nature's so big and powerful that, you know, you can't really go into it, and they kind of go into it, but I mean, I don't know. I want to say more, but it's all on the blog.
What's your blog address?
It's rewindthatcast.blogspot.co.uk.
Yeah. We'll get a proper website up and running. Probably by the time this goes up, we'll have something up and a proper Twitter and all that rubbish. But, so where do you want to go now, dear? Anything else you've been watching lately? I mean, as I said, I watched Robocop the other day. Do we really want to get into that now? Or should we save that for the next week?
Well, we'll save that for the actual special on the argument between remakes, reboots, prequels, sequels, and that, because there's an argument that I've seen recently going around the internet relating to studio executives, box office gross, R ratings, PG-13 ratings, which, again, this film completely destroys that argument, because this film's PG-13 and it's going to be a monster hit, but okay, the argument does suggest that a PG-13 will equal a monster hit, but at any point in this movie, did you need it to be R-rated?
No.
No, you don't. The original Star Wars movie was a U.
But, I mean, times have changed, though, haven't they?
Well, yeah, times have changed, but, you know, it doesn't mean audiences necessarily have. We still just want good characters, a good story, and something unique.
Mm.
And that's the problem. Most films don't deliver anything unique anymore.
Yeah.
They follow the same tired formula, like stick Johnny Depp in a funny hat. That'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a movie. Give Johnny Depp a crazy character. There you go, that's a movie.
What's the new one he's doing?
Got Transcendence.
No, he's doing another one with Tim Burton. Another character like that.
Oh, I don't know.
Let me just IMDb it. Got the all our notes down here. We're very professional. IMDb and live on air. Through the Looking Glass, The Mad Hatter.
Oh, what? The sequel to Alice in Wonderland?
Oh, is it a sequel? I don't know.
Yeah, it's the second book.
I don't know, I just browsed over something the other day where it was like Hume and Tim Burton and blah, 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 and Helena Bonham Carter. And I was just like, oh, is he doing another film?
That's not gonna work. That's not going to replicate the box office that Alice in Wonderland did, because
Alice in Wonderland weren't very good anyway, in my opinion.
No, it was, that's the point, it wasn't very good. But the reason it got so much sort of revenue through the cinemas was, correct me if I'm wrong, it was the second major 3D release, wasn't it, after Avatar? Well, Avatar was the big 3D is here. I'm not talking about My Bloody Valentine 3D, I'm talking about 3D, you know, box office 3D. And Alice in Wonderland was the next movie after that, and it wasn't very good at all.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what does look good, though, which I'm quite looking forward to, is Maleficent.
I knew you were going to make me pronounce that. Maleficent. The Witch Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
I just knew to make me pronounce that. I literally cannot do it.
Maleficent. But, I mean, I think I'm all just, I'm all, Disneyed up, because I've just got back from Disney World, so I have, like, pretty much a week straight of just Disney shot down my throat, so. But it does look quite good, it's quite interesting, you know, it looks a lot better than the Alice in Wonderland. I think the thing wrong with Alice in Wonderland is it was too much bright CG in your face, whereas, you know, there's obviously a lot of CG in, Maleficent, but it's very dark, isn't it? It's almost Lord of the Ringsy, but not as shit.
Yeah, it's like, because Alice in Wonderland had that colourful element to it, almost like a Joel Schumacher movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, Lost Boys is a dark film, but he adds this kind of colourful nature to the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously with, like the fluorescent paint and stuff like that, like Batman Forever, and dare I say, Batman and Robin. So, yeah, Tim Burton. Hey, we're talking about Tim Burton and Joel Schumacher in one kind of like speech here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was dark, but still colourful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus also Tim Burton's, he's tired, it's so old now, it's done. Same movie, different title.
Yeah, just need something fresh, don't we?
Well, the thing is, back in the day, back in like 1996, I would have said that the 1996 Steve would have said, "Oh my God, Michael Bay needs to direct everything."
Mm.
And now, how wrong have I been proven with that? But then again, if you watch Pain and Gain, compared to his Transformers, it's not that Michael Bay is a bad director, it's just that he doesn't need to be making any adaptations. He, on, you know, on original sort of scripts, he still delivers, but if he takes Transformers or Pearl Harbor, he fucks it up.
So, I mean, is there anything else we want to cover before we wrap up?
No, I think we'll wrap up for this, like, first initial installment.
Yeah. I think it'd be a good time as well, because, yeah, our signal's starting to lose track for weather-wise, probably. But, I mean, thanks for listening, guys. I hope we haven't turned you, guys and girls, I hope we haven't turned you away in the first episode by slagging off Godzilla the whole time.
Hey, look, if you read the entire post, or, you know, I'll launch a video on YouTube explaining my points. It's not that I hate the film. It's not. It's just that I will not be drawn in and fooled to thinking something's perfect when it's not perfect. But I won't nitpick. I won't nitpick either.
Yeah.
I'll explain my reasoning.
Yeah. You're not just going to sit there and go, shit, deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's shit and that's the reason why, you know? There's reason. And hopefully you've got a good one to defend yourself with.
There's method in my madness.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks for listening, guys and girls. I mean, hopefully we'll have another episode up within sort of like the next week or fortnight. And, you know, we'll have a blog and our website and Twitter account and all that by the time the next episode rolls out. But, you can catch my Twitter at bamsam_md. Steve, I mean, is there anywhere someone can catch you between now and then?
Yeah, you can check me out on rewindthatcast.blogspot.co.uk, and I'll be at Comic-Con in London all weekend, uploading onto my Instagram all the photos and doing vlogs and interviews from there.
Yeah. And I don't know, if you're on Twitter or something, search behind the box office, beyond the box office, and I'm sure you could probably find us by this point. Don't search behind the box office.
What goes on behind the box office, eh?
I don't know.
Is that how you get free tickets?
Yeah. Free tickets. Yeah, but, yeah,
so. Sucky, free tickets.
Yeah. Hey, this ain't a free ticket. It's like, I don't even work here. But yeah, cheers for listening. And tune in again soon. What was you going to say?
Go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Oh, and before you go fuck yourself, stay tuned for the Taylor Nichols interview. Oh! So I want to welcome my guest to the show, a man you may have seen in such films such as Congo, Jurassic Park 3, Boiler Room, and Barcelona, Mr. Taylor Nichols. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sam. Good to be here.
Yeah. I mean, I probably mentioned it before that that I've spoke to Taylor before he came on our Jurassic Park podcast, and they had a massive fan response. So when I started doing the movie one in general, I'd thought, you know, who can I go to first, and whose films do I enjoy, and who's just a really nice guy, and that was you, Taylor. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah. So I mean, rather than just talk about the one film, we'll talk about your career and some films you enjoy. So I mean, I suppose we'll start from the top. What got you into acting, really?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I stuttered as a kid. And I still do, you know, less badly. And I think I was always, you know, for some reason, acting was a little bit of a solace from that. I had a lot of anxiety about whether I would stutter or not in a role or something like that. And then that sort of changed after a while. And I just sort of, you know, grew to accept it and who I was with it and all that. And I think what kind of got me into acting was the fact that it was a way to overcome this, you know, quote unquote obstacle that I had. I went to college in Michigan. I went to the University of Michigan.
Okay.
And I studied acting there, and I had a really good acting teacher that got me kind of involved. And when I graduated college, I also sang and danced and stuff. Almost like the first 10 years of my career, I did musical theater. I toured in Sugar Babies and 42nd Street. I was a tap dancer.
All right.
And, you know, I just liked it. It was just fun. And then I kept getting work, so I just kind of kept doing it. I don't know that I ever made the conscious decision that I'm going to be an actor. I got a job and I did it, and then I got another job and I did that.
Just rolled in.
And I just kind of kept going, yeah.
I mean, was there anything before acting that you thought, you know, I want to be a carpenter or an electrician, or was it just, you just went with the flow?
No. You know, sports. I would have loved to have, you know, been an athlete. But I just wasn't good enough. I'm a big bike rider. I follow, you know, the pro races, and I'm an advocate for, biking and, you know, safe biking. And I know that you guys, who's your mayor? Boris?
He's the mayor of London, ain't he, Boris Johnson?
Yeah. Aren't you in London? I guess I thought you were in London.
I'm just outside of London. So.
Oh, okay.
I mean, just a few miles down the road.
Well, so just meaning that I know you guys have made lots of advances in biking there. And I'm, you know, Mark Cavendish, you know, you name all the Boonen. Of course, I guess he's South Africa, or not Boonen. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm thinking of all the English bike racers that have won the tour for the last couple of years. You know, England's on the map all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, have you not been...
Boom, is the guy I was thinking of, sorry.
Yeah, have you not been tempted to come over and ride a Boris bike, as they call it?
I would love to.
I'm surprised that you, like when I've been to London, I haven't just seen piles of them burnt out in parks. But, you know, maybe if they're doing something good, you know, people don't take the piss with it, if anything. But, I mean... Obviously, you took up acting and that, and did you sort of just eventually go out to Hollywood, or was you just
I went to New York first. I graduated college and, you know, just started working, and I worked my way out to Colorado. I worked in theaters along the way, and then I worked in Aspen, Colorado, which was really a blast. I skied in the wintertime and rode my bike in the summertime and did a show every night. And it was really a great learning experience because I was on stage all the time. And you just can't beat that. You know, I'm a big film buff and, you know, film history buff. And when you learn about people like Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin, you know, you really realize that, you know, they did hundreds of short films before they ever did a feature-length film, So they really knew what they were doing. And I think the same is true with acting. You have to spend time on the stage. You have to spend time, you know, dropping lines and figuring out how you're going to get out of it. And you got to figure out, you know, how do you do the show when you don't want to do the show and all that kind of stuff. So that was an invaluable experience.
It's like music, isn't it? You shouldn't record an album unless you can sing live on the stage.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, that's the problem with a lot of singers now is I don't think that they can sing live on the stage.
No, there's definitely a lot that can't.
But so then I went to New York and I lived in New York for a long time. You know, doing theater, and that's when I did those national tours of musicals, and I studied with a man named Terry Schreiber, who has a big school in New York called the T Schreiber Studio.
Okay.
And then that's where I got my first movie job, which was Metropolitan, a movie by a guy named Whit Stillman. And that opened up a lot of doors. I had a really fun, good role in that movie, and the movie got a lot of attention. It went to the Sundance Film Festival, and it went to the Cannes Film Festival, and it was funny. I was on the road with Sugar Babies, and we were out west somewhere, and someone called me. This was before cell phones, so it was really a difficult process for them to call me. And they said, your picture's on the front page of the Arts and Leisure section of the New York Times. And I said, why? And the guy, my buddy said, for this movie you did, Metropolitan. And I was like, oh, God, I almost forgot about that. Because, you know, especially in small films, it takes a long time to go from shooting the film to it actually opening.
Yeah, I mean, it can take a good few years sometimes, can't it?
So. Right.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously that started to put you on the map. I mean, where did you go from there? Was you still in New York? Obviously, you said you were touring with the Sugar Babies.
Yeah, I went back to New York after that tour of Sugar Babies was over, and then the movie came out, and that changed things. Then I started getting more work and bigger work, and then I started coming out to L.A.
Yeah.
I did a commercial in L.A. Then I came out for the Oscars for Metropolitan, and then I did a pilot with an actor named James Garner. Do you know who that is?
Yeah, James Garner.
Yeah. So I did a TV pilot with James Garner, and he was just great to work with. You know, he's like the old guard, Hollywood's old guard. He was in
the
Maverick, of course, and what was the TV show, but he'd done a lot of movies too.
Yeah.
That show got picked up. I moved out to L.A.
Yeah, was it, what was it called, the show?
It's called Man of the People.
Oh, yeah.
It was a political show. And it was kind of the first of its kind. It was a half-hour dramedy. So it was not a sitcom comedy. It was a one-camera show, but it was a half-hour. And, you know, now they have a lot of those shows, you know, that are half-hour, one-camera, that aren't, you know, your full-on sitcom format. And this was one of the first shows like that. And it was really a wonderful show. We had a great cast. And again, working with James Garner was really special.
Yeah, I remember him from, it was sort of, towards his later end of his career. There was a show over here. I mean, over there, but it was on TV here a lot when I was in college called, 8 Simple Rules.
Oh, yeah.
He played the grandfather in that. So.
Right. And of course, it was also in, Rockford Files.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was such a great show.
Yeah, that was good as well. I mean, obviously, this leads you up to probably your next big jump, wasn't it, which was Barcelona.
Yeah, now that was with the same filmmaker, Whit Stillman.
Yeah.
And Whit had cast me in that right after Metropolitan. And it took him 2 or 3 years to kind of get that movie off the ground and going. And in that time, I was, you know, working in New York and then coming out here to L.A., which is where I am now. And that was really fun. That was a fun movie to do and experience. I met my wife doing that movie. You know, the movie was written by an American who goes to Spain and falls in love with a Spanish woman. And the movie was about an American who goes to Spain and falls in love with a Spanish woman. And the actor who played the lead, me in this case, is an American who goes to Spain. And I fell in love with a Spanish woman, and she's making the beds right now.
art imitating life, imitating art.
Exactly.
Anything. Yeah, I mean, what was that like? How long was you out in Barcelona for shooting that?
We were there for three months probably.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to Barcelona a couple of times. It was a nice city. Obviously, this was you was in the 90s. Obviously, I went about five or six years ago. It was a really nice city. I mean, I could spend more time out there. So you were probably quite blessed, you know, to spend that amount of time out there.
Yeah, and also when you're working, it's really fun to. I mean, one of the great things about being an actor is traveling to work.
Yeah.
Because you're not a tourist. You know, you're a traveler, and then you actually set up house. You know, you're I mean, even if you're in a hotel, you're there for a month or two. And when I did Congo, we were in Costa Rica, and you know, I had a small role in Congo, but we were in Costa Rica for, geez, almost a month. And you know, it's just a great way to see different parts of the world because you're working, so you have a reason to be there, but. Unless you're the star of the project, you know, you have time free where you can, you know, just see the country, the people and stuff.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about Congo, obviously. It was on TV literally like 2 days ago. Here,
oh.
And I watched it, but unfortunately it was the, do you know the watershed over here? Basically, if it's on TV before 9 PM, they cut out pretty much everything that's, anything to do with violence or naughty language.
Really?
But after 9 o'clock over, you can put anything on. You could say the C-U-N-T word. You could say anything.
Wow.
But before 9 o'clock, it's just, you know, nothing gets by. But,
I didn't know that.
Unfortunately, it was a 5 PM show in the Congo. So I was watching it. I was like, there's a lot of stuff missing out of this film. I know all these characters get killed, but you don't actually see them get killed. Like obviously your character's eyeball gets launched at Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell, who's such a great guy. Bruce was so funny on that. I don't know if we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
But you know, we were always in our costume and in our fatigues and walking around, and Bruce would do this this crazy act. Every time he saw water, he would like flip out about having to cross the water. And I don't know if you know who John Hawkes is. John Hawkes is the other guy who was in our little group, and he's gone on and done really quite well. He's been doing some really wonderful movies. And John and I and Bruce would just sit there and laugh at Bruce as he did this, you know, 5-minute act about being scared of crossing water. So he's really a special person.
Yeah, I mean, I love Evil Dead, and one of my friends, Dean, he's a huge Evil Dead fan. He's got a big Bruce Campbell welding a chainsaw tattoo on his arm because he's that much of a fan.
Oh,
and,
my God.
Yeah, I mean, you see it, like, you see, watch all the behind-the-scenes stuff of Evil Dead, and there's him and Sam Raimi are like almost like the Three Stooges, aren't they? So they're always putting on little skits. So, I mean, that must have been a lot of fun. But obviously, obviously Congo was probably like, it was your first like big budget action movie.
Yeah, I had met Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy at sort of a social gathering, and they are were the producers, and Frank actually directed Congo, and he's directed a lot of things, but Kathleen is, you know, the queen of Hollywood. I mean, she's really just an amazing producer, produced all of Spielberg stuff, and is now running Lucas's
like Star Wars, everything now, aren't you?
Yeah. And they're both really just, I mean, I feel like I come on your show, Sam, and just kind of gloat about people but the truth is I've been really lucky to work with some fun people.
Yeah.
And Kathy and Frank I'm on like a first name basis with them. I haven't seen them in 10 years, but, they're both just really open, good people. And they had invited me to come in and read for a role on Congo. And I didn't tell them that I was in Barcelona. And this is a funny story because the day that I had the audition for Congo was the day that Barcelona opened in theaters. So when I walked into the room, which is sometimes a little bit of a nerve-wracking situation for an actor when you walk into an audition room, you're not quite sure who's going to be in there or whatever. Frank leaned forward and put the copy of the LA Times on the table that had my picture from Barcelona on it and said, you didn't tell us about that, which was really nice. So he was very, very supportive of me and my work, even though, you know, Barcelona was a teeny film compared to the stuff that, that he works on.
Yeah, it was a good film, though. Yeah, obviously, you know, it's nice that they were accepting, like, not accepting, yeah. But you know what I mean. But obviously, I mean, that must have been a lot of fun. I mean, we obviously after that, I assume like more roles just started coming in for you and that, and you were getting your face out there and a lot.
Yeah, you know, the truth is, it's always been a struggle, and I think that's true for a lot of actors. I know that some actors all of a sudden just turn around and they take off. I fall through a lot of cracks. I'm not, you know, the nerdy friend, nor am I the cool lead guy, and I just fall through a lot of cracks. And so it is always been a struggle. I've always worked, but I'm always fighting for the role, and I'm always fighting for the audition, and that's tough after a while. You know, you kind of want your body of work to stand for something and to stand for who you are as an actor, and yet you still have to go in every week or whatever and prove yourself anew that why you're right to play this guy on this show. And that's hard. That's been tough.
Yeah, I mean, you've built up quite an impressive resume so far. I mean, you can't sit there and look back and be like, you know, I'm not proud of what I've achieved, you know.
No, thank you. That's nice. I am. I just wish the people that having me come in and read for them would go, you know, like feel the same way.
Yeah, so I mean, and like, you know, you've worked with so many. I mean, if you, as you said, you can just look at the films you've been in and you can see, name all the people that you've worked with, and it's just like,
yeah,
well,
I've been really lucky to work with a lot of great people. And in fact, I just worked with a Brit, a guy named Gareth Edwards. Do you know him or not?
Gareth Edwards rings a bell.
He's a director.
Was he the guy? Oh, I know. I know what you're getting at. He's the guy who did Monsters. He's doing Godzilla now.
Yes, he did Monsters, and he's doing Godzilla, which opens here, May 16th. And I did a small role in that on their reshoots, and I got to work with Gareth, and he was really really a fun guy, really a great guy, and apparently comes from this low budget world of action movies. You know,
yeah,
I didn't see Monsters, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of them ones. I think it only cost him like a few grand to make. It was like he pretty much flew out with him and a few people, took some cameras, pretty much used their surroundings where they were, shot this film, and then pretty much added all the special effects in themselves after.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's definitely worth checking out. It's a really good film, and for what they, you know. Achieved with so little resources, you know, it's very impressive.
Yeah. Well, it certainly put him on the map because Godzilla is, you know, a $200 million movie. I don't know what the budget is, but $150 million movie. So
yeah, I'm sure that's going to put him on the map. So.
Yeah. And plus, he's just good. He's good at what he does. He knows what he's talking about with actors and with shots, and he's fun to work with and supportive of everybody, and
I mean, it's nice that they're giving, like, these directors a chance now, like him and the guy who's doing Jurassic Park 4, Colin Trevorrow,
right.
Because he worked on, like, a $1 million independent movie as well. That's all he had done before Jurassic.
Yeah, they haven't called me for that yet, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
I want to be in Jurassic Park 4, and I want to bring you guys along, no?
Yeah, I mean, they've got to have a space for the guy who deals with the international relations, haven't they?
I mean, somebody has to get eaten.
Yeah.
I just might as well be you.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to be eaten in the Jurassic Park. That's the most memorable part of the first one, the guy getting eaten on the toilet. So.
Well, and there's also the writer for the first one gets eaten, David Kep. I don't know if you know who Dave Kep is.
Yeah, in the second one, doesn't he?
Hollywood writer and also director, and he wrote Jurassic Park, and he's one of the guys who's being chased and gets eaten in
Lost World.
In the Lost World, right?
Yeah. No, that's a lot of fun. I mean, obviously I don't want to sit there and prod for spoilers about Godzilla, but I mean, is it sort of a role that you know, that I'm just going to be, that we're going to watch and be like, oh, there's Taylor, or is it somebody that would be like, oh, that's...
No, I'm barely in it. I came in for reshoots, and I actually had to sign, you know, all these waivers and, you know, about not telling anybody anything. And, you know, even at the audition, I had to sign a waiver, and give the, sides back. They wouldn't let my agent have the sides so that the actors could read them ahead of time. And, so we just had to get to the casting office and read them and then go in and do it. So to be honest with you, I don't really know how the movie ends. They needed to, tie Ken Watanabe to an incident in the film a little bit stronger. So David Strathairn and Sally Hawkins, and Ken and I are in this scene where we're talking about, a possible way to stop the disaster. I guess maybe I could say that. And then I'm gone. I'm in one scene, then I'm gone. They needed they were putting the movie together and they needed another scene to tie two things together. And so they cast me to come in and tell this little story. And that's it. But it's fun. It's a good part. I really enjoy doing it. But, don't blink.
No, I'm going to be watching out for it. I mean, that was awesome because when I spoke to you before and over the emails and that, and you were like, oh, I'm doing Godzilla. I was like, oh, as if I wasn't looking forward to this enough. Now, you know, I'm going to keep an eye out for you. Probably distract me from the rest of the film going, I wonder where Taylor is. So I can turn to my wife.
Where is he?
I will turn to my wife and go, oh, I know Taylor. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I mean, have you got anything else planned? What's next for you?
The next thing that I'm working on, I forgot whether we talked about this, but this is a movie that I produced called Shooter, and I also acted in it, and it's a low-budget movie based on a book by a guy named Walter Dean Myers, and it's a story of the friends of a high school shooter, of a kid who goes into a high school and with a gun and shoots other students. It's a really... It's a very strong movie, and we have a great cast. Harold Perrineau from Oz and from Zero Dark Thirty and from Lost is in it.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Harold,
Edwin Ross, who is Diana Ross's son.
Okay.
And he's really wonderful. He's the lead. And Levin Rambin, who's in the Hunger Games movies, is in it, and she's great. We did one scene. She has one scene in our movie that is 20 minutes long. And we did the whole scene in one take. And, you know, she got the whole scene in one take. So that's really a special thing, especially for a young actress to be able to do that. And then the other actor is Melora Walters, who is in all the P.T. Anderson movies.
Yeah.
Okay. All but not.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, when can we expect to see that? I mean, I say that, but obviously, U.S. and U.K. releases differ.
I think we're going to have a hard time getting a theatrical release. We're closing in on a sale now for video on demand and cable and things like that. So I think that's probably where the film is going to end up, which is too bad because it has such a great cast. But it is a small film. It's a tough sell for someone to put a lot of money behind a theatrical release.
I mean, like, with this video on demand, though, I was having a conversation with someone that I work with about video on demand, and I honestly, in sort of the next 20 years, I think theatres are going to be extinct, you know?
No, I don't think so at all.
Yeah? I mean, obviously, I don't want them to, but...
I think that the communal experience of going to the movies is never going to die. It might change. You know, it might change. It might be more of a special event. You know, it might be more you just go see the big blockbuster movies in the theaters. But even with the small films, it's really powerful to sit in a dark room with a bunch of strangers and watch a film. And even as, I mean, this is just my thought, but even as home TV screens get bigger and bigger and bigger, and movies get more and more expensive and all that, I think people are still going to be drawn to going to the theater.
I mean, you still get that experience here and there, like where you're just totally drawn in when you're at the cinema. And, but I mean, I don't know how it is over there, but over here at the moment, you know, the ticket prices are getting higher and higher by the month. You know, the like the snacks and the sweets and that are just, you know, you go in there and you feel like you've been robbed after you buy a drink and some popcorn. And, you know, and so a lot of the cinemas are sort of letting themselves go a bit. So unless you go out of your way to go to a really nice, say, like a new cinema and that, you're not going to really get the full experience. But, I mean, obviously, as you said, it's like the smaller films haven't got the money to sort of push them into the cinemas anymore. But, I mean, I've seen so many films in the last couple of years on Netflix, et cetera.
Yeah,
where I'm
yeah.
just like, that, how does no one know about this film? And, yeah. You know, or I would have loved to have seen that in the cinema, but unfortunately, right. you know, as you said, you know, it probably will be where, you know, small, it will only be sort of like big budget, blockbusters and stuff that will be in the cinema.
I think so. When you watch it on Netflix, do you just watch it on your iPad or on your laptop or your desktop or how do you watch it?
I can't watch things on my phone or my laptop. I have to watch it on TV. I watch it through, you know, like a PlayStation.
Oh, okay. So well, that's handy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the TVs now as well, you've got Netflix. I don't know what you've got over there. Obviously, over here, a lot of new TVs have Netflix and we've got Amazon all built in. So you don't so you just use your TV remote, you plug it in or you hook it up to your internet and or your broadband and you're set. You don't even have to get up, you know.
That's new. I've not heard that. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, you're not the only one who knows about it, but I've not heard that TVs have Netflix or, you know, that PlayStation kind of, capability already in the TV.
Yeah. I mean, they're called smart TVs, you know, they're massive and, expensive, but they've got everything you need built in. A lot of them, we're talking on Skype. I know my uncle, he's got a smart TV, a big, huge one. He's got a camera in his TV, so he can Skype people from his TV. You know, it's.
God, it really is the Jetsons, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Actually, I don't know if you've seen them. I upgraded my mobile phone to the latest Samsung, and they sent me a free smartwatch. I don't know if you've seen them.
No.
Yeah, basically everything your cell phone does is a watch. I can, as long as I like, it connects to your phone via like a Bluetooth. And as long as it's in sort of like a 20 foot radius of your phone, my watch is my phone. I can dial people out. I can receive text messages on it. I can take photos and videos. You know, it is something like out of Star Trek. I mean, you should look them up after, like Google smartwatch.
Absolutely. I totally will. You know my dad is 90 years old, and he wrote my daughter a letter when my daughter was born about how when he was born, they didn't have even a phone in the house.
Yeah.
He grew up in the South, and they didn't have a phone. You know, he had to go to the neighbor's house to make a phone call. And now at 90, you know, he has an iPhone 5, and, you know, I text him, and it's just, you know, gosh, things are changing quickly lately, and it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. But, I mean, as I said, you know, I was talking about the future of cinema and that with these, as you said, like with the TVs, with everything built in, you know, it's going to be hard, especially, I mean, obviously, you know, probably these lower budget films are going to find it near impossible. So, I mean, especially with all these new technologies, you know.
Right. Well, you know, but at the same time, though, Sam, it's making it much easier to make these small films like Gareth Edwards, who was able to go out and make that, you know, action movie on a low budget, or like me doing Shooter on a very low budget, we're able to do that. And yeah. I think that's what's good about the Netflix video on demand, market that, you know, I think we have a chance to make our money back. And if we do, then we'll be able to get more money for our next one. And then maybe we'll be able to get enough money where we can really make a film that has a shot at, you know, getting a theatrical release, you know, with an actor that has, you know, a big enough clout to sell it to Europe or something like that.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, that's what so much of it is. If we need the money, we have to pre-sell Evan Ross and Harold Perrineau to different markets around the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys are great actors, but they don't really quite bring in that kind of money yet.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'll be pushing it on the podcast when it comes out, when we know a release date.
Good. I will fully let you know. Yeah, you can tweet it, right.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I look forward to it. I mean, as he was talking about low budget films and that, I don't know, because you were speaking to Jack as well over the email, who I did, the guy from the Jurassic Park podcast about, I'm not sure if he mentioned to you that me and him done a Godzilla film.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
It's not a film, it was a low budget, YouTube video film. It's about 15 minutes long. It's called Godzilla Returns. I'll email you the link. It's so cheesy, and all it cost was a couple of train tickets into central London. It's cheesy, but it's very charming.
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah.
Well, send me the link, and I will tweet it out there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, time's getting on now, so I don't want to keep you all day, Taylor, but, I mean, if people want to, obviously, you know, do you run a Twitter so that people can just...
I do. I'm at Taylor_Nichols7.
So, you know what? I've got that up on here, actually, because I was just seeing if you had a Twitter before, but I didn't know if it was your official one or not, because, you know, everyone's got, like, 50 million...
Well, you know, there's this guy named Taylor Nichols who's, like, in Tennessee, and he's kind of a right-wing... I don't know if he's a wacko or not, but he has everything Taylor Nichols. He got the Twitter and the Twitter and all a bunch of other things. So I'm at Taylor_Nichols7 for my Twitter, and I tweet about a lot of cycling stuff as well as movie stuff and also politics. I tweeted that Supreme Court Judge Anthony Scalia jumped the shark, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I just wanted to get out there because obviously, as I said, so many people sent us praise for your episode, you know, and I'm sure they were for this one as well. So I just want them to, you know, rather than tell me, tell you. So
absolutely. Good.
And, once we finish recording this and that, and once it drops, I'll tell them to follow you and I'll tweet you and just say, send Taylor some kind words.
Perfect. I'd love that.
All right, Taylor. Well, Sam,
I've dug it, man. We talked to like for a half hour. It just flew by, man.
Yeah, I know. It's great. I mean, it's all, as I say, it's just such a pleasure talking to you, Taylor. And I mean, we've talked to a lot of people on the Jurassic Park one, and I've talked to a few on here, but you know, it's just, you're just one of the nicest guys to talk to, and you're so easy to talk to. And, you know, I wish you all the best with, your projects coming up, and, I'm going to be championing Shooter when it comes out, especially over here.
Good. I will let you know. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a good story.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. But it's been an absolute pleasure, Taylor. Thank you again for talking to me on this podcast and the old one. And hopefully I'll speak to you soon.
Perfect, Sam. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, Taylor.
Bye-bye. Bye.